My name is Maria.
And I'm Rachel.
And we're the hosts of Remember Me.
Each week, we'll be tackling a different component of FTD, and we invite you to come along on this journey with us. We'll be interviewing the Dream Team at the Penn FTD Center, a multidisciplinary team of doctors, social workers, researchers, and beyond. This season is a beautiful combination of stories and science where you'll hear from both experts and past guests.
Whether you're on the other side of this journey, if you're in the thick of it, or sadly just starting to hear about FTD, our goal in creating this series is to provide more context, more understanding, and lots of compassion for both you and your loved one. As we share the stories and we listen to the science, it's our hope that this season reminds you that you are not on this journey alone.
This is season 8 of Remember Me.
It's good to be back. It's good to be back.
Oh my goodness. That was a great warm up. Thank you, Rachel.
You can always count on me for a chuckle. I have to say I am excited to be here.
Excited to record our last episode of the season? What are you excited about?
Just like the normalcy of just like chatting with you.
Okay.
You know, this season was great, but it was a lot.
I think we knew it was going to be difficult from a production standpoint, like editing wise and piecing things together. I don't think we anticipated like emotionally
how challenging
it was going to be. I think
also, welcome to the finale episode. Maybe we should get a little hello. What's to come?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, yes. All right. So today, I feel like, you know, when you're writing a paper in like middle school and you're like, in conclusion, you always end the conclusion with, yes. in conclusion.
And like the first paragraph is, first, I will explain how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Then I will tell you how to eat it. And lastly, and in conclusion, we'll clean the plate.
And then you're like checking the word count to be like, am I at 500 words? Okay, oh I got to add 3 more in conclusions. Okay.
So, I have to add another and then.
And then the, yes. Just
I always
adding.
Felt very resentful of teachers that did that. I'm sorry. Don't give me a word count. Let me express myself. If it takes 10 words, if it takes 200, let me just express.
But you're like a writer. So you're going to do a good job. Anyway,
Just call me Hemingway.
Fine. So good. And you're becoming a grief expert. I mean, you're just really getting on another level and I'm trying to keep
up. You know how I get. You know, I'm like blushing behind the mic, but also keep saying it. It's fine.
The wind is blowing. If you hear the wind whipping and the wind chimes, those are my mother. Mm. Just so you know, the wind chime when they jingle, that's her.
She's just here chatting with us too.
She's here. She wants to be a part of the final episode. So just so you know, she's there.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, welcome, Leah. And welcome to all our listeners. We're back at the mic, just the two of us today. We're going to be just digesting and talking about this last season. Because like we mentioned, it was an emotional one. And
yes,
like a sneaky emotional one.
Yeah. We always feel like we're prepared and then
not
prepared for this one. We've said it plenty of times, but thank you to the Penn FTD Center. Incredible team.
Huge.
I mean, we knew going in that they were going to give us golden nuggets of wisdom and information, but totally blew us away just in the compassion that they show when giving information and just their interest in our personal stories, their interest in learning more about, you know, the stories that were shared with us in interviews that we would tell them, okay, well, this person expressed this and how would you deal with it? And they just class acts, all of them.
Can we share what is happening?
Yes. Okay, well, before we dive into like our little itinerary for our in conclusion episode essay.
In conclusion, that's going to be the title.
In conclusion. Okay, it has to be. So good. I wasn't the only one, right? Like, did you always start them with in conclusion?
Yeah. Okay. Sometimes I still do. Okay. Like when I'm writing something, I'm like, ooh, I'm in seventh grade, but it's okay. I also have two kids and don't know what I'm thinking half the time. So.
All right. So since you guys are going to be missing us, we should just tell you what's just a couple things that are ahead. The wing time is really going hard right now. Okay. Up next, we will be.
We're going to Philly.
Going back to Philly.
We're going to Philly and we are participating with the Dream Team at UPenn in their research study. It's going to be. Am I nervous? No. Yes.
I'm nervous. I'm very nervous because I have never been the participant. I've only been the world's greatest study partner and DJ in the waiting rooms.
Oh, that's right.
But yeah. This what time, like, do the hustle.
Woman. Oh, do the hustle. Yeah, right. God, what am I? Whoops.
So I don't know. Am I going to tell my birth story while getting the MRI? Like, I don't know.
Who knows? Yeah, who knows? You
never
know. Are
we going to have the Jesus of Nazareth robes that we have? Like, I don't know. This is a new experience. So we're going to go do it.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I am not nervous at all because I can tell what kind of people they are. You know what I mean? Like, these aren't just Joe Schmo at whatever. This is like...
Like, we have relationships with them now.
We're going to be in good hands, right?
We're going to be in great hands. I'm looking forward to the experience and just finding ways to share it with everyone, too, and just make research a little less scary.
Okay,
so
we'll do that.
There's that. If you're listening, if you're a good listener.
Oh, ooh.
Oh, boy. If you listen to this, like, right as it comes out. We're also going to be at the AFTD conference. We're doing a very special breakout. So, you know, if you want to keep up with all our many, many, many adventures, some big ones too, follow us on Instagram, join our newsletter,
check the website.
For members only, go to our website. There's so many ways to just like stay in touch. And
what would you consider a bad listener?
I guess it's not a bad listener. I don't consider nobody's a bad listener. If you're listening, we love you.
Okay. I've never heard you use the term good listener.
And I don't know why I said that. I say that all the time to Liam, be a good listener.
Oh, always. I need you to be a good listener. And my
Put
kids
on
are
your
like,
listening ears.
No.
I'm always pass. Like, sounds like the listening ears aren't working today.
See, Max is too old for that. He's like, they're not. I'm like, oh, well, thanks for clarifying. Glad we're on the same page now. I'm going to go back to my room. You stay in here.
Anyway, there's a lot coming up and we will be producing a ninth season of the podcast.
Can you just say that one more time for the people in the back? Because I don't know if you understand, like, nine seasons?
That's a lot. Nine seasons. Yes, there will be a ninth season. Because Rachel is the force that just really propels us forward, even when I'm not ready to be on this train, we just get on the train and we're full steam ahead and we have a season 9 planned. There are many people that have applied to be on the podcast. We have another, you know, specific kind of theme for season 9. So you'll be learning more about that.
It's more general.
It's back to stories. So you can know that.
We need to go back. Need to go back.
Rachel wants to go back to stories. I like the stories too. This was an important season. I think we
this
should
was
get
needed.
Into it. I think we
okay,
should get into our conclusion.
Let's do it.
Okay. So
all right, in conclusion.
So Rachel and I wrote down our top moments and the top things we learned from the season. We have not shared them with each other. But we're going to do that now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And should I say what we're going to do after?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay. Just you got to keep listening. Okay. So now we're going to share with each other. And I think that you should go first.
Oh, okay. My top number one moment of the season was having previous guests back to discuss certain things. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize how much I would enjoy that. And I think what it did is it offered more of like an in-depth experience. Like when these people were talking, I was like, I'm in the room with X, Y, and Z while they're experiencing this. It was like very honed in and it wasn't as general. Not that stories are general, but it was very specific. And I appreciated that.
They're all great storytellers, you know?
Yes. Yes.
All of them, and all so willing to be extremely vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Like they're not just saying like the facts of
right.
what
they're talking about
heard. They're talking about this is how I felt. And I think many of them have had the opportunity to reflect mm-hmm. on the experience, which I think helps provide just a richer understanding of like your feelings and your mindset at the time. It's not just like spitting facts, you know?
Whoa.
What?
That was really beautifully said. It was richer. It was richer. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you for saying what I was thinking.
You're welcome.
Your turn.
So one of the most profound moments for me was when we were interviewing Dr. Irwin and we were talking to him about just this experience that you and I have had. And we had talked to Mitra about where like our parents were still like in some moments, like very instinctually like mm-hmm. parents where like if we were hysterically crying in front of them, they'd like still try and like comfort us even when they were like progressed in their disease. And he just, I'm not gonna paraphrase it well, but like just the moment of him explaining that these emotional connections like in our body can be stronger than the disease was something that just really has stuck with me. It's just a really beautiful, I felt like when I asked him the question, he was gonna be like, yeah, we don't know. Because mm-hmm. I think that's a typical response from doctors when, you know, we ask some of these more complex questions. But he like really thoughtfully answered it in a way that, I don't know, it's just really beautiful.
It felt very reassuring.
Yeah.
Like they're still in there.
It wasn't
I hear
like
you.
Dismissive of like, yeah, we don't know, you know? Mm-hmm. And like he did say like, you know, that's hard. I don't really know, but here are some theories or
sure.
It was validating. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was a top one for me. What about you?
I agree. It's also a top one for me, but I won't say that's my second. My second is, I think it was really, I don't know, want to say the word cool, because I can think of a better word than that. I think it was really special, and not everybody has the opportunity to meet with a UPenn FTD team like we did. Like getting to speak to all the different facets of a machine that works to better this disease was something that I think I took for granted at the beginning a little bit. Like I was like, oh yeah, we get to talk to them. It'll be great. But getting to know these people and understanding like where their heart is, I think was like, oh, this is not a job.
Right.
Them.
No, it's not a
this
job.
This is like, they truly like care.
Yeah. They're like, what's the word? Like
they're
almost
like
vocation. Like this is their
calling. This
calling.
Is like something they're, you could feel when you're talking to them that like they're the support blanket. They're the whoopee. Like, you know what I mean? They are the people who not only understand the science side of it, but I think they also understand like, or they don't lose sight. That's what I want to say. They don't lose sight of how detrimental and terrifying this experience is. And I'm going to throw in my third because I'm just on a little bit of a roll.
Okay. Okay. Go for it.
And I really, really appreciated the way they spoke about somebody with FTD. Mm. I don't think a lot of people do that. I think they always made it a point to say, you know, if we're in the room with a family, we always speak directly to the person. Like they just have a way. There's a little bit of a Justin Timberlake charisma when we're talking to them. And I really appreciate that. I mean, it's not like my GP is charismatic and kind. Like, I'm a number, you know, and right. these people, I don't think they view it like that. And I think that's important when you're dealing with a delicate disease like this.
Yeah, I really feel like there's a lot of doctors out there that could benefit from listening to their approach. Along those lines, like something that stuck out to me when producing this season and talking to all the experts was the impact that Murray Grossman had on them. Now, we never got the opportunity to meet Murray Grossman. I believe he passed away last year, maybe the year before. But essentially, he was the one that built the Penn FTD Center. And many people that we spoke with, you know, they sought out working at the Penn FTD Center because they wanted to work for him, for Murray. And I don't know, it just made me think about like legacy and just the impact that man has left on this earth through, because everything comes from the top down, right? So like I'm sure he was, and I think everyone that we talked to would agree with this, like, he made them this way. He taught them this way to be with the patients, and he taught them about the disease, and he put the patients first. And I believe he was like the reason they started that caregiver conference. So like, he put in all this work that is going to carry on for many, many years to come, even though he's no longer here. And so it just was really incredible that like every single person that we talked to brought him up at least once. Mm-hmm, and he's made like such a mark on this world.
Mm-hmm. And you know what's the worst part is like, does he know?
I feel like people like that, like,
he probably lived it. Like, he probably, you know,
they don't know. They don't like, they don't operate because they want to make an impact. Like, they just are that way, you know?
So beautiful. I know.
So beautiful. I hope his family somehow, this gets to them somehow, you know?
I just saw the hamster wheel spinning in there for a second. Like, how could I reach?
I'm not going to reach out to them personally, but I hope they know, because like that would be comforting to me and my grief. And it has been when people have said, you know, things that my mom did or small gestures or anything that like just like left an impression on them, you know?
It's the best. Yeah, I know.
That was a really cool thing. Okay. And you shared all three of your top moments.
I just kind of ran through them.
Okay. That's fine. We're being efficient today. That's fine.
It's great.
Okay, so we're now going to talk about things that we learned. We each wrote down like three things we learned.
Oh boy.
Can I go first?
Yes.
Okay. Please. So something I actually like really learned about my experience with my mom. I learned so many things. I think that was something we didn't prepare for, is like how much we're going to go back and like reflect on our own journeys. It was almost like we were having flashbacks. Like, would you agree?
Oh, yeah.
You told stories about Frank that I had never heard before, because I think so many things were coming back.
Yes, totally. Yeah, of course.
Go. One thing I learned that has changed me in a way is, I don't think I realized that when I had told my mom that I was pregnant, I don't think I realized with the primary progressive aphasia that she probably didn't understand the word that I said. I didn't know that. I never thought of that. I knew she couldn't communicate herself, but
Didn't know there was an understanding component. Yeah. You thought it was all language. Yeah.
Because, you know, we always tell the story about like when she came into the hospital room and the reaction and us all being like, is she going to react? And that she reacted so beautifully. It was like the most magical moment. And when we were speaking with Dr. Emma Rhodes, she was like, well, your mom could see and understand, mm-hmm. interpret the situation without words. But mm-hmm. maybe when you just said you're pregnant, she probably didn't understand what that even meant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just had never, like, it healed a little something. I don't know.
Good. That's the whole point. Not the whole point, but that's a big reason why we did this, is the understanding. If you don't understand something, you'll never fully like integrate it in. You right. just kind of keep it at bay. So I think that's good. That's a great thing to learn.
What did you learn? I have more, but I mean, let's go back.
You know, I'm more of like the feeling-y type. I'm not very tactile.
Okay.
But I will say, even though I'm always like, we need answers. Okay. I will say one of the things that maybe I didn't necessarily learn, but I think I appreciate it a little bit more, is there are so many things at play in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I ever stopped to be like, well, if this part's like not functioning at a higher or at the highest rate, then it's also going to affect this and this. And that, like, I didn't see the snowball of it
right.
all. I just thought my dad's going outside and picking up cigarette butts because that's part of the disease. Like, okay, it wasn't his left anterior. They know exactly, like, in the brain what is happening. And I don't think I ever stopped. I know I never stopped when my dad was here to be like, this is not only horrendous, but like, this is par for the course. Like, I just thought my dad's weird. My dad's a weird behavioral guy. I never fully got like his brain in there, is the wires are crossing, and it's just not, I don't know. I guess I'm not explaining it right. Like, I guess I learned, or I appreciated, or I understood more of like what was happening behind the scenes. And I never really, I guess I don't think I ever really accepted it, is probably the better word, is I just thought like, my dad's sick, we just got to get through it. I was never like, okay, this is how it is. I was right. always fighting for what's coming. I never was just in that moment like, this is that part. This is right. where he stops talking. This is where he stops walking. I was so overwhelmed that I never, I mean, it's kind of as bad as it is, it's kind of like phenomenal how the brain is deteriorating and the people are overcompensating. And it's just, I don't think I'm explaining it right, but I learned a lot. And I think fully understanding like this happens because of this was extremely helpful, and more helpful than I thought it was going to be.
I agree. I do think you're right, though, when you're in the moment of caregiving, like, it's hard to even fully process this is happening because of this. Like, you're just so right. overwhelmed.
Right.
I couldn't in the moment with my mom when I said I'm pregnant and she said, let's go to Wegmans. Like, I couldn't be like, this is the disease. Maybe she doesn't understand the word. Like, it wasn't that kind of party. Like, it was.
Yeah.
it yeah. was. All hands on deck all the time, trying to get through the day, you
yeah.
know,
yeah.
so
yeah.
overwhelmed that like, yeah, how could, I don't know. But I think one thing that maybe people who aren't on this journey, like, don't understand is that like, even when your loved one's gone, like, this is a part of you forever. This experience, the guilt, the grief, the memories, like, it's not like, okay, well, this is done. I mean, some people do that, I'm sure. Okay, it's done now, moving on with my life. Like, this is a part mm-hmm. of us. Like, we're still dealing with it, even though they're not here. And so I do think this season really helped sort through some things. I also think, like, to your point of like everything being connected and everything, the importance of sleep was something that stood out to me with our conversation with Jeff Manival. Dr. Jeff Manival, that was one of my favorite interviews. He is like, if people aren't getting good sleep and in a good rhythm, like, there's going to be a cascade of other issues. I never really thought about that.
I know, but when you stop and think, like, Remember the newborn stage where you're like, I have to tape my eyelids up. Like you're so tired and everything is fuzzy and you're not eating right because you're just like, give me that bag of chips. I got to get out the door or what? It all is connected. Okay. Your next one. Was that your next one? The sleep?
The sleep was a big one. I just think in general, that conversation with him, I learned a lot.
I have one.
Okay, go.
Katia's episode. I thought when she's talking about disinhibition, and that was a part of my dad's journey that I still have a lot of trouble understanding, because when you see somebody who was like an upstanding citizen and just a good human being, knew right from wrong, like flip the script and be like, I'm going to do whatever I want. To me, that was like very difficult to wrap my head around, but fully understanding, like there is no control. They are not thinking the way we think, helped me not only understand my dad, but understand like he wasn't doing things to upset me.
Right.
He wasn't doing things to be difficult or he wasn't a contrarian. That's not who he is. But I just found that particular portion of my dad's disease and that particular episode just helped me kind of understand that he is still a good person. His brain just is going haywire and he isn't controlling it anymore. He's living in the id, basically, of Freud's whole thing. And I think when you're in it and you're caregiving and your loved one is doing things that are inappropriate and frankly, like very embarrassing, it's hard as the caregiver to still see, like, I know you're in there and this is not who you are. I also, like I was telling my husband, I'm like, it reminds me of when my kid is having a tantrum or when they used to have tantrums. Like, they're so activated, they don't see. They're just upset. There's no logical talking them through it. And I tried so hard to talk my dad through it. We don't pick up cigarette butts. We don't do that.
Right. There's That's no gross. Correcting behavior. There's no new learned like behavior.
Right.
There's no, right. Yeah, there's no learning. Yes. Yes.
That's where it ends. You're not introducing something new. And I think that was really interesting too, is when, I don't remember which doctor said it, but like, you're not going to teach somebody with a brain disease how to use sign language.
Right.
Like, it's just not happening.
That was in the PPA episode. Cause I remember someone told me that in support group, I shared that. And I was like,
oh, that's right.
That's not happening here. Like you don't have to, like,
right. Right. And I think though, like when you're in the thick of caregiving and you're just trying to figure it all out, a human reaction to seeing something done that is not right or is bad is to correct it.
Right.
So I think some of the lessons are, especially in Katia's episode, like you have to rearrange the environment. You are the one in control. The person is not. So if you know your loved one picks up cigarette butts, go to the store, empty out cigarette butts. Like you have to be one step ahead.
Right.
And I don't know if I ever was. I think I was just like,
okay. I was very reactive.
Right. I think I still sort of am, but yes.
I don't know. I see you as a planner, at least in the business side and the creative side.
Like, yes, definitely the business side. But when I was caregiving, I was just like, what's next? Let's figure it. Like, I just never really like took the time, I think, is something that I learned.
But like you didn't have it. Like, I don't even think you had the space in your brain. Like,
no, I know I didn't.
It's hard. Like I go back and I'm like, I do feel guilt. But going through the season, I felt a lot of guilt just realizing she didn't have control over a lot of things that were hard and frustrating. But like at the same time, I give myself grace that how could I have known?
Sure. But like, I think I was more of like the opposite. I was like, I knew this is part of the disease. I knew that this is what it is. And I was still upset. You can't take it away. Even if you knew that your mom didn't understand that you said, I'm pregnant. Like inside, your like gut response is to be like, I want more. I want you to say, yay, and hug me. That doesn't go away just because you understand that their brain doesn't work. That's the hard part.
I think the way to say it is it takes maybe like the edge off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's just in retrospect. I don't know. I think that's honest. I think that's very honest. I think it's very helpful to understand, but it when it comes to the feelings of it all, it's all still very hard.
I think it's helpful to understand now.
Yeah.
If someone were to say, stop telling him to do that and just X, Y, and Z, I'd be like, he's my dad. I'll do what I want. You know, it was a lot of processing during this season.
Yeah.
And the way that the UPenn FTD Center explained it definitely clarified, and it definitely shed light on some things that maybe I either ignored or purposely looked away from. But ultimately, the journey is over and I can't go back and redo it. But I have a different sense of why my dad did the things he did and what was happening. I'm going to just keep going because I'm a MyCog. The last thing I learned, and I think one of the most impactful things, and I think deep down, maybe I sort of knew it, kind of goes along with what I was talking about with Katya's disinhibition stuff. My dad had no idea what was going on. And I think hearing that from multiple different experts is like when we would say, like, do they know? Do they know this is happening? And there was no clear cut, like 1,000% yes, they know.
Right.
I think that is what saved my heart, is that he had no idea that he was picking up cigarette butts and that it's disgusting. He thought, this is what I'm doing and this is what I feel like doing now.
Right.
And that
he wasn't like embarrassed. He was just living.
Right. And I don't know, that part felt extremely like I was swaddled in a blanket. Like it just felt very reassuring and very, I don't feel so sad for him.
Right.
I would feel sadder if he knew that this was happening to him all day, every day. Maybe he had a glimpse here or there, like, oh, am I in a, what's that? Whoa. But I don't think he really, really knew.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sticking by that because if I go down that spiral of, did he know? Did he not know? Did he know that he was in the back of the Mexican food restaurant eating chips? It wouldn't be good for me.
That's something that I feel like has come up for you in many interviews since the beginning, is you always asking, like, do they know?
Mm-hmm. Every time.
So I feel like you've finally kind of gotten to a place where you kind of have your own answer. Yeah.
That wasn't necessarily like in a concrete statement, like they do not know, evidenced by.
Right.
But
and
I think
the different stage of the disease, I'm sure, you know.
Yeah. The consensus is there's not a lot of insight.
Right.
That's what we heard a lot.
Right.
There's
right.
not a lot of insight. And that is the saving grace, I think, for these people.
I just think I guess we're focused really on our own personal experience, which is very important. But like, I think that there's just a lot of validation that came from all the episodes, but also like maybe some for people newly on the journey, it's almost like now they're not going to have to go look up like, oh, is eating sweets and like putting objects that aren't supposed to be in your mouth, like in your mouth, like. I think they have some sort of maybe like a roadmap of like, these are things that can happen. They won't necessarily happen to everyone, but like, I'm just hopeful that like the people that are on a different stage of the journey, like this is really helpful to them. And then the people sure. that are kind of on our side, that it's like validating for mm-hmm. their experiences. And I think that's the feedback we've gotten. It's just a lot of people being like, thank you for talking about these things. Like, this is something I experience as well, especially when it comes to like some of the trickier behaviors that we haven't gotten into in a deep way in some of the stories of like the hypersexuality and like the alcohol abuse and things like that. Like, I think people really appreciated mm-hmm. that we mm-hmm. dove into those things. And I hope it's like educational.
I think in yes conclusion. I think what you said, like the people who are just starting out on this hike are like, this is the map I'm going to use, and maybe I don't veer left and see a lot of PPA, or maybe I don't veer right and I see a lot of hyperorality, but these are the things that can come. It's not the same, but like I equate it a little bit to pregnancy. Like if you know what could be happening in there, I feel like you're like, oh, it's normal that the baby is in my rib cage. Like,
right.
It's just, it's less scary when you know what's coming. And I think
I agree. You
did a beautiful job on explaining this could happen, but it's not hallmark FTD. This could happen, but it's not. I think that's a really, really good way to explain it. Because when you go on the internet and you type it in, you're like, oh, wow, there's a lot coming my way.
Right. I don't know why that's such a good example. It makes me think of like when I had Liam, my godmother told me like before, and it was such a hectic time. Everybody knows it was a really stressful time. But when I was, you know, about to give birth, my godmother said, just so you know, like sometimes the babies are jaundiced and they'll put them under the lights. And like, this is what happened with Christopher. And she said back in the day, we used to put him in the window. And that was like how you like treated the jaundice. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so when the doctor comes in after I had Liam and is like, he's jaundiced, I was like, okay. Like,
yes, you are prepared.
And you know, I'm an anxious person. I was like, oh, okay. And they're going to do the lights and the like, and
right.
I was like, thank God that was like the one thing she told me. Because totally. If I had never heard of what jaundice was before, new mom, already stressed, already out of my mind, I would have been like, what does it mean? What's going to happen? Blah, 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 blah. Totally. But it was like just the preparation of it was so helpful.
I will also equate it to a pothole. When I'm driving down the street and I see a sign, pothole ahead, thank you. I want to call the city and say, well, it's like you said, LA is fancier. I want to call the city and say, thank you for letting me know to go right or to go left. I don't want to go straight over that pothole, not knowing what's going to happen to my car.
Right.
That just for the people who maybe don't have a baby, because that's a lot.
That also brings me to the disease trajectory episode. I think that was a very important one. I think that's something that you've been talking about for a long time. Like, you always want to talk about the end. And I'm like, it's too much. But like the way that Lauren even just acknowledged, like, this is a very common question with people and they want to know what it looks like. What it, you know, I don't know. Just, I hope that was helpful to people. I think just knowledge is power, you know?
I think also too, knowledge can be scary. Like when you know, like your loved one is going to X, Y, and Z, you're like, okay. And you're always waiting. Is this the right. day that it's going to happen? Is it?
Right.
But I think the way it's described and brought up is, and they caveat all the time, it's not going to happen to everybody.
Right.
So I think there's beauty in knowledge, there's planning, and there's proactive steps. I think you just have to take it step by step, because when you start like, okay, I have to get this in order and this in order, and you start overstepping, you're like, okay, now I'm spinning.
Right, right. I liked their approach too. They said, you know, sometimes they talk about certain things in the first visit, but they like kind of see, like they read the room.
Totally.
And they're like, okay, like Kate, was saying, you know, with the POA and the guardianship and the long-term care and all that stuff, mm-hmm. she was like, you know, sometimes I just introduce myself and I follow up with an email like later in the week to set up a time. Like, I think they're just the team of angels, like you said, just the compassion that they show and the understanding. And I don't know.
One last thing before we get to the big, big finale. Something that I really wasn't necessarily like planning on, I don't know, is the people reaching out to you and me.
Oh, yeah.
People that we have never heard of. I live in the UK. I'm in Brazil. I'm in
Idaho,
Minnesota. Like,
yeah.
People that we have never talked to. I've been listening since the beginning. This episode has been so like that. Just one of those messages would have made it all worth it. But hearing from people that have never felt either compelled or they were nervous or whatever to reach out to us, I think that is worth its weight in gold because they are receiving something that we never did. And that's
right.
Part of our mission is to be something we didn't have.
Right.
So thank you to all those who reached out. That was a breath of fresh air, especially from Brazil and the UK. Like, hello, across the pond. Okay.
Can I just share one other just like thing that had stood out to me that I had jotted down was Dr. Jeff Manivall's episode when he was talking about how, I think it was him that said like, everybody just wants to feel like understood. Like they just want to be heard. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's just like you were describing some situations with your dad where you're like, I'm not going to argue with him. Like, I'm mm-hmm. not going to tell him like, no, that's not my grandma's face in the pattern of the thing. Mm-hmm. And he was like, yeah, everybody on a human level, like they just want to feel loved and heard and understood. And mm-hmm. I just thought it was a really good takeaway. Just, you know, even our kids, they just want to feel heard.
Totally. So do we.
Falling off the bike or whatever, you know,
right.
It just like it leveled like the playing field a little bit of like, we all just have this need to be like heard.
Yes.
Validated, you know?
I know. See, the way that they speak, like they're not like, okay, well, you know, they're different. So
exactly.
It was never presented like that. It was always like, this is what you do, not what they do. This is what you do. This is how you respond. And I think that's, if society could live like that, it would be Pleasantville. There's no, I'm going to put this on you. This is your fault. You're the one making me go chase you down the street. It was very like, if they leave, you have to lock the door.
Right.
I appreciated that.
I liked that too. Well,
let's get into it.
This is a little different. Okay.
My favorite part.
Yeah. So do you want to explain what we're going to do?
So, you know, we always end with a letter or something written and special. And we, both of us, wrote a letter to our younger caregiving self. So looking at it from now into the past. And Maria's going to go first.
Yes, because I don't want to follow up whatever Rachel wrote. I don't even know if we took the same directions or
I bet
what,
you we didn't.
But I know that hers is going to be amazing. So I want to go first.
Okay. I was literally like, I wonder if this is going to sound like Maria's. Okay, go.
Okay. So I wrote, Dear Maria, who just received the news, I am so sorry. I know that it feels like the world is upside down. And it will feel like that for years to come. But just know that you'll be okay. Everyone will be okay. The years ahead will be filled with experiences you never imagined.
Okay.
You're going to be put in a lot of uncomfortable situations that will break your heart. The tears will flow and it will feel like they'll never stop. I'm not going to tell you how everything's going to play out, but I will give you some tips. One, it's the disease. It's not your mom. Remember that. Two, there will still be many moments of connection between the two of you. Savor them. not only in a these moments will end kind of way, but in the present moment, look into her eyes and be right there in the moment with her. 3, not everyone is coming on this journey with you. Your relationships are going to change. There will be heartbreak when people don't show up the way that you wanted them to. Do not waste too much time on this. If they're not going to be on this journey with you, they're not. You won't be able to convince them. And as much as it hurts, again, you're going to be okay. Every relationship that ends, you're going to be given another one that's even better in its place. 4, try not to be anxious about how she is in public. There's so much to be learned about how to treat other people through this experience. Let people stare. It's okay. She's still herself. She's just finding new ways to express it, and you should let her. 5. This is the last one, okay? 5. Accept the help, the emotional help, therapy, support group. You'll need it. It will carry you through. You're going to build up so much armor. You will be ready for all the battles in life that come after this fight. This experience will transform you, and not into a bitter, sad person. If you stay true to yourself and you do the work, you will become the person you've always wanted to be. You're going to be okay. And that feeling of love, the comfort, the feeling of home that she gives you, you will find it in yourself. She's given you all the tools to make it through. And I promise you, at the end, there will be guilt, but there will be no regrets. You'll have done everything that you could do. She will be with you even when she's gone. You're going to be okay. I promise. You okay?
That was so sweet. Mine is nothing like that. Okay. Oh boy, I don't know if I can do it. I'm going to do it, but it's going to be a lot. I started crying in the library. You know, I'm not a public crier. I'm a shower crier. Okay.
Okay, good.
I may go off camera if it gets ugly. Okay. Dear me, the girl with the big brown eyes, the girl with the broken heart and the spinning mind, I see you, and I have so much to say to you now from the other side. Let me start by telling you what an exceptionally remarkable job you did caring for Frank. I don't know if I ever realized how gentle you are, how tender and delicate your heart is, but man, I see it now. Watching you through my own eyes and now replaying it all back in my memory, I know there is a deep, longing sense of wanting more. More time, more doing, more being there. I can feel it still, and I know it's something you felt then. But looking back at your time as his caregiver, I think that yearn for more is reasonable, and I think it's a demon that will forever be present. It's the want for what can never be. I want to tell you that I witnessed your bravery, your perseverance, and your dedication. I want to tell you that on the hardest days, I know your heart was always in the right place, and I am so proud of you for settling into a role you never wanted, the role of a caregiver. You stepped into it with responsibility, with integrity, admiration, and pride, and Frank was so lucky to spend his final years embraced by your support. You made big decisions, you advocated, and you loved. What a life-altering experience you endured. I know the guilt found its way into your unsettled mind as it still twists in my insides now. I know you never imagined Frank in a nursing home. I know you wanted differently for him and for you. I know placing him there still haunts you, and I know you spent sleepless nights planning how the two of you would blow that old popsicle stand. I remember it all. I know how much it hurt you to walk away after a visit and how awfully slow your heart would break on the drive home. The guilt was tangible and intense, and you handled it beautifully. I know we both wish things were different, you then and me now, but I can finally tell you it's natural. It's the want for what can never be. I remember how you toiled with keeping your sadness at bay for your kids, learning how to integrate motherhood and loss. I never realized what a big undertaking that was. I never realized what a hard place that was to live, but I don't think you did either. There is something so sacred about both experiences, about becoming a parent and gracefully losing your own. I can assume it felt overwhelming to manage both. In fact, I know it did. But you carried it, you carried them simultaneously, and I'm pretty sure you learned to trust yourself more along the way. I know it felt like you were doing it all wrong and that most days ended with a heavy sigh and an even heavier heart. You loved openly and you loved fully. And now, from this vantage point, I can rest assured that both your babies and Frank knew it. Looking back and reminiscing, I want to tell you, to tell myself, that this experience has ultimately made my life more fruitful, more abundant, and way more profound. I have watched myself rise up to an occasion that was overwhelming, an occasion that I never, in my wildest dreams, saw coming, and met the unknown head on with a heart on fire in hopes to create a happy life for Frank. And you know what? I would do it all over again. All of it. This journey, although despondent and unkind, was full of some of the most beautiful and untamed moments of my life. Looking back on this in its entirety fills my heart with good. I am who I am today because of who I was back then. I see the world a different way because of this journey, but more importantly, because of the poignant loss. I love a certain way because of this. I am humbled and honored to have taken on this role, as much as I didn't want to, for a person who loved me so fully and just as I was. What an absolute privilege it all was. To the girl with the big brown eyes and to the girl with the broken heart, you made it.
A special thank you to the Penn FTD Center for their collaboration on this season, and a special thank you to our sponsors for supporting our work. For a list of sponsors, you can check out our show notes.
You can also check out our website for more support, more resources, and more community events. And you can follow all of our adventures on Instagram at Remember Me Podcast.
This podcast is dedicated to Frank Baffa and Leah Kent. Beautiful music you hear is a song called So Damn Lucky by Bailey Kent.